Hello, and welcome to the Whole Life Health Podcast, conversations to empower your healthy whole life. I'm your host, Lexi Endicott, a registered dietitian and certified culinary medicine specialist. Throughout this podcast, I hope to provide applicable, realistic, and practical tools to improve and optimize your health. Before we dive into today's episode, I would first like to issue a small apology for my sudden disappearance over the last few weeks. I have been in the trenches of preparing grad school applications and also trying to stay on top of my job duties, both of which sapped most of my intellectual energy, thus my absence from the podcasting sphere. But I am happy to report that I submitted all of my applications this week. Yay! So now I am back here podcasting and very excited to bring you today's episode. So thank you to all of you for your patience. We're back. As a reminder, today's episode and the next four episodes will focus specifically on each of the six factors that make up that health acronym. And then in episodes following that, we will get to hear from and learn with guests that can speak to their experiences and expertise regarding whole life health. To review, health stands for home environment, education, access, lasting habits, time, and help. Today, we are going to focus on the second factor, education. There is no doubt that education is of high value and importance. From kindergarten all the way up to postdoctoral fellowships, learning allows us to engage and interact with the world with more clarity or at least more curiosity. When I was in third grade, my grandmother taught me how to crochet. Yes, I was that cool. On show and tell day, I demonstrated to my classmates how to make a crocheted scarf, clearly displaying how much of a fashion icon I was in 2005. Although I have since abandoned my crocheting hobby, this new knowledge of how to move my hands and interpret instructions enabled me to develop a skill that brought new benefits and excitement to my life. I also gained a greater sense of appreciation for the people and machines that could make scarves and sweaters that laid straight and didn't end up endearingly lopsided. Okay, but what does this story have to do with health? Well, not a whole lot really, unless of course crocheting is a part of your stress reduction or natural movement regimen, in which case, keep it up. But what the story is really meant to highlight is the benefits that come from learning something new, which has the ability to enrich our lives. New information can empower us to make choices, which can likely promote and optimize our own health and potentially the well-being of others. And even if you choose to make a contrary choice, at least you have the pre-existing knowledge that the choice isn't necessarily supporting your health, at least in that regard. As an undergraduate student, I completed a dietetic internship throughout my junior and senior years. Every dietetics program has a specific focus area, and at TCU that happened to be nutrition education. At the time, I was pretty apathetic towards the matter because I wanted to focus on cooler topics like clinical nutrition or sports nutrition. However, I can now confidently say that I am grateful that the focus was on nutrition education, and I actually wouldn't have wanted it any other way because this background has given me the tools and awareness of the benefits of education. Knowledge is power. Knowing which foods are nourishing and which foods are nutrient poor, knowing which forms of movement are beneficial versus those that could be harmful, knowing sleep hygiene tips, and knowing stress reduction strategies can empower you to make healthy, informed choices. Of course, this could be a really long episode because education covers, well, nearly everything. You could argue that this episode is a bit meta as I aim to educate about the importance of education. We'll try not to get too sucked into that though. Basically, I'll go over some nutrition 101 information, then I'll briefly cover some key points about physical activity, stress reduction, and sleep. As part of your educational journey, it's important to acknowledge that these four factors have huge effects on long-term health. Again, there's no way that I can even begin to scratch the surface on the complexity and infinite nuances of these subjects, so today's discussion will be the 10,000-foot view version, And then ensuing episodes with future guests will narrow in on more specific topics. All right, buckle your seatbelts and get ready for the crash course in the fundamentals of nutrition. Let's start with the ABCs of nutrition. And no, I'm not trying to insult your intelligence, but as you may have already picked up, I really like acronyms. And I actually learned these ABCs in the Nutrition 101 course that I took at TCU, so you're getting some real college level stuff here. A stands for adequacy, meaning that the eating pattern provides all of the essential nutrients, fiber, and energy in sufficient amounts to maintain health. I could go into a ton of detail from just that sentence alone, but let's get through these letters first, and then I will. B stands for balance, meaning the eating pattern provides foods in proportion to one another and in proportion to the body's needs. C stands for calorie control. This one's pretty self-explanatory, basically just managing one's food energy intake. The next three letters actually aren't D, E, and F, but I'll still keep them in alphabetical order, M, N, and V. M stands for moderation, meaning that the diet provides enough, but not too much of a substance. Many people often think of moderation with regards to dessert and or alcohol. N stands for nutrient dense, which measures the amount of nutrients that a food provides relative to the energy that it provides. For example, blueberries are a highly nutrient dense food. They contain lots of phytochemicals, vitamins, minerals, water, and fiber, and not many calories, whereas a can of root beer is a fairly low nutrient density food, as it supplies a lot of sugar and calories and very few, if any, vitamins or minerals. Finally, V, which stands for variety, meaning that the diet provides a wide selection of foods within and among the major food groups. With these principles in mind, we can begin to evaluate meals or dietary patterns to assess their healthfulness. The acronym can be a helpful tool to have in your educational tool belt when it comes to planning or preparing a healthy meal or menu. Again, those words were adequacy, balance, calorie control, moderation, nutrient density, and variety. I encourage you to bring those words to mind at your next meal and determine if your plate checks all of those boxes. If not, what are the factors preventing you from checking those boxes? This could be related to what we talked about last time, your home eating environment, or it could be related to any of the other factors, such as access, time, existing habits, or simply a knowledge deficit. So with this all in mind, let's continue our discussion of fundamental nutrition principles. Within the adequacy definition, I mentioned the phrase essential nutrients. What are essential nutrients? They are the basic units that we get from foods which either provide our body with calories or help our bodies digest and utilize those calories. There are two basic categories of essential nutrients, macronutrients and micronutrients. Macronutrients provide our bodies with energy in the form of calories. There are three macronutrients, which I'm confident you have heard of before, and they are, drumroll please, carbohydrates, protein, and fat. You have likely heard differing perspectives on the ideal balance or ratio of these three macronutrients to one another, which I acknowledge can be a cause of deep frustration and confusion. There is significant evidence pointing in the direction that a whole foods, plant-forward, Mediterranean-style diet, which contains all three macronutrients, promotes long-term health, longevity, and disease prevention. And it just so happens that this eating pattern also promotes planetary health, can be highly flavorful, can be culturally appropriate, and tends to be more financially accessible than many trendy or exclusionary diets. Here's a quick and dirty rundown of each of the macronutrients, how much we should aim to consume, and examples of foods that supply them in the diet. Of course, this is very general information, and certain health conditions may necessitate different recommendations. So definitely take this with a grain of salt, and for more guidance to meet your specific needs, speak with a qualified healthcare professional. Let's start with carbohydrates, or more commonly referred to as carbs. Carbohydrates should typically constitute anywhere between 45 to 65% of calories consumed in a day. Carbohydrates are found in dairy products such as milk and yogurt, both whole and refined grains, starchy vegetables, fruits, beans, small amounts in nuts and seeds, and sugar in all forms: cane, brown, molasses, honey, maple syrup, agave, etc. Many carbohydrate-containing foods are paired with fiber, which helps slow the digestion and absorption of the glucose molecules in the food. This fiber helps to prevent large spikes and dips in blood sugar following a meal, which is important for promoting lasting energy as well as preventing chronic diseases. Many carbohydrate-containing foods are also packed with vitamins, minerals, water, and phytochemicals, all of which can also promote long-term health. That said, there are also many foods within our current food supply which provide rather nutrient-poor carbohydrates that are lacking in both fiber and micronutrients. Refined grains and sugars are abundant in our food environment and sometimes even more readily available than their whole counterparts. Sodas, chips, cookies, white breads, flour tortillas, crackers, cereals, and so on are foods that often lack many essential nutrients and can cause irregular metabolic responses, which over time can lead to certain chronic diseases. This is not to demonize any food or food group. I will be the first to admit that I eat pizza made with white flour every Friday. That said, I ensure that I get adequate fiber and other nutrient-dense foods both before and with that meal. So simply put, take this information as an invitation to evaluate if the carbohydrates that you consume by and large are providing your body with the maximal benefits possible. If it is simple to swap the refined carbohydrates for the whole version, for example, in breads, pastas, cereals, crackers, and so on, I encourage you to do so. It's a simple swap that can have major downstream benefits. Next up, protein. Protein provides our bodies with compounds called amino acids, which perform a diverse array of roles beyond building muscle. Protein is essential for maintaining a strong immune system, healing from injury or surgery, creating enzymes, building hormones, transporting nutrients around our bodies, creating blood cells, growing strong hair and nails, promoting satiety, and providing energy in the form of calories. We should aim to consume anywhere between 10 to 35% of our daily calories from protein. That is a very wide range, and truly most of us get more than enough protein to fit within that range and to meet all of our body's essential functions. Honestly, even people following vegan or vegetarian diets can get adequate protein without supplementation. Protein can be found in nearly all food groups, with the exception of oils. Of course, we have our animal sources of protein from red meat, chicken, turkey, fish, eggs, milk, cheese, and yogurt. And we have our plant sources from soy, quinoa, beans and legumes, nuts, seeds, and other whole grains. Even vegetables provide some protein, and avocado, which is a fruit. Including a protein source at a meal can help you feel satisfied and can help control your post-meal blood sugar levels. Finally, fat. Fat can be found in both foods as well as on its own, such as in oils, butter, and lard. Aim to consume about 20 to 35% of your daily calorie intake from fat. Fat is important for brain health, heart health, post-meal satiety or fullness, joint health, nutrient absorption, and from a culinary and just simple enjoyment perspective, flavor and texture. As with the other two food groups, there is much controversy and debate about the types and proportions of fats to include in the diet. In general, choose liquid oils when cooking, such as extra virgin olive oil, avocado oil, and in baking, canola oil. Extra virgin olive oil, or as I like to call it, liquid gold, is also great for topping salads, mixing into homemade hummus, quick sautéing, or finishing soups. Limit your consumption of fried foods and ultra-processed foods, as these are often made with highly refined and often pro-inflammatory vegetable oils. When cooking, reserve oils such as butter or lard for flavoring purposes and use in balance with other heart-healthy ingredients. Also, aim to include nuts and seeds in your diet, as well as fatty fish such as salmon and sardines or pasture-raised meats, as these foods will provide heart and brain-healthy omega-3 fatty acids. Whew, so that's just our macronutrients. As you can tell, there is still so much more to explore, and I'm really curious to hear what you all are most interested in learning more about. So send me a message at wholelifehealthpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear. So the other half of the essential nutrients equation is our micronutrients. I'll keep this discussion fairly brief for now. Micronutrients do not provide energy in the form of calories. They do, however, assist in many of the metabolic processes that turn our calories into usable energy. Vitamins, minerals, and water are our three forms of micronutrients. A balanced diet rich in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, lean proteins, and healthy fats should technically supply all of your day's worth of vitamins and minerals. But unfortunately, most people don't consume a balanced diet, and also soil quality may impact micronutrient levels as well. Shifting towards a balanced diet is definitely my first recommendation for improving micronutrient intake, but there are some instances in which responsible supplementation may be recommended. This could be due to an underlying iron deficiency, B12 deficiency due to following a vegan diet, inadequate calcium intake due to lactose intolerance and low consumption of other calcium-rich foods, or other metabolic issues which interfere with absorption of specific nutrients. When it comes to supplementation, I always use the phrase, test, don't guess. There are many tests available on the market to consumers, and of course, clinicians have many tests which they can run that help you determine which nutrients could use a little help through both diet and supplements. Again, work with a qualified healthcare professional to determine what will be best for you and your lifestyle needs. Moving one step beyond essential nutrients are functional nutrients, such as probiotics, fiber, and phytochemicals. Although one can technically survive without them, if we are looking to optimize and promote lasting health, these other nutrients play key roles. Probiotics are live bacteria that are often found in fermented foods, which, when consumed, contribute to the diversity of bacteria that exist within our microbiome. Trillions of little critters line our large intestine and create compounds which can promote brain health, digestive health, and just overall metabolic health. We can find probiotics in foods such as kimchi, kefir, kombucha, tempeh, natto, miso, and sauerkraut. Pair these foods with a protein source for better digestion. I mentioned fiber earlier when discussing carbohydrates. Our digestive enzymes actually cannot break down fiber, but our gut bacteria that I just mentioned thrive on fiber. When we feed these critters fiber, we're essentially giving them their essential nutrients that they need to survive, and it's a synergistic relationship because when they thrive, we thrive. In addition to these gut health benefits, fiber slows down our digestion, which keeps us fuller for longer. It decreases blood sugar spikes and dips, can help lower cholesterol, and help promote a healthy weight. Diets that include more fiber are often linked to lower risks for type 2 diabetes, certain cancers, and heart disease. In general, it's recommended that women consume about 25 grams of fiber per day and that men consume about 38 grams of fiber per day. Most people get between 10 to 15 grams per day, so if you are working to up your fiber goal, add it gradually in order to limit GI discomfort. Phytochemicals are compounds that give plants their diversity of colors. Including a variety of colorful foods in your diet will provide your body with a vast array of phytochemicals which can help prevent disease and promote health. Lycopene is one example of a phytochemical found in many red fruits and vegetables, such as tomatoes and watermelon. This phytochemical has been linked to a variety of positive health improvements, such as decreased cancer risk, improved cognition, and metabolic syndrome risk reduction. Other phytochemicals you may have heard of before include resveratrol, quercetin, curcumin, catechins, theobromine, anthocyanins, and literally thousands more. Examples of food sources of these health-promoting compounds include grapes, apples, turmeric, green tea, dark chocolate, and blackberries. Think about the colors of each of these foods. Pretty vibrant, right? Other fruits, vegetables, spices, herbs, beans, and whole grains, basically all naturally occurring plant foods, contain many more phytochemical compounds that can provide a variety of other benefits. The more naturally colorful we can make our plates, the better. And yes, I said naturally colorful. Skittles and Fruit Loops do not count. So now putting this all together, what might a healthful dietary pattern look like? As I mentioned earlier, I recommend following a whole foods, plant-forward, Mediterranean-style diet. I promise that it's not as complicated as it sounds, and the more practice that you get, the easier it becomes. To borrow a phrase from author Michael Pollan, which I think sums it up nicely, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. You can learn more about the context of this phrase in his book, In Defense of Food. I've also included a few links to some helpful articles that I've written about plant-forward diets and the Mediterranean diet in today's show notes. So now that we've covered the basics of what makes up a healthy diet, I'd like to briefly touch on three other fundamental nutrition education principles, as I believe they can be highly transformative when working to make health shifts. And those are nutrition label reading, portion control, and cooking skills. If you have the ability to pause and go find a food in your environment which has a nutrition label, I encourage you to do so. It will help what I am about to discuss stick so much better. Or if you can't grab one right now, the next time you can, try to apply this information to that label. When it comes to nutrition label reading, there are lots of things to pay attention to. I recommend starting with the serving size and servings per container. These numbers will help you interpret the rest of the information on the label. For example, if there are 3 servings per container, but you ate the whole container, you'll have to multiply all of the values on the label by 3. Or if you didn't even eat one full serving, then you'll have to divide accordingly. Next, take note of the calorie content. How does that number fit within the context of your overall eating pattern? Is it enough to satisfy you for one full meal, or will you have to supplement with other ingredients? Moving down the list, take note of the total fat and, if possible, the types of fat that the food supplies. Next, if you are tracking your carbohydrate intake, take note of the total carbohydrates in a given serving. This is particularly important if you have diabetes and use carbohydrate content to dose insulin. I often encourage looking at fiber next. Remember that 25 to 38 grams of fiber per day is recommended. If you are at the grocery store and note a lack of fiber on a nutrition label, is there an alternative ingredient that might supply more? Or if the food is in your home, what could you pair the food with to increase the overall fiber content of the meal? Next, look at added sugars. It's best to limit total daily added sugar to no more than 25 grams for women and children and no more than 38 grams for men. These numbers are actually pretty easy to remember because they're the same as the fiber recommendations. Next, look at the protein content of the food. Does the food provide enough protein to be satiating? If not, what can you pair it with to add more staying power? Last, but certainly not least, check out the ingredients list. First of all, check that you're not allergic to any of the ingredients. Then read through the list. Is it a super long list with lots of words that you don't recognize or can't pronounce? If so, proceed with caution. Again, it's best to consume whole foods, so limit foods with super long lists as this can often be a red flag that it is an ultra-processed food which may be lacking in many essential and functional nutrients. Better than anything would be to consume mostly foods that don't contain any nutrition labels because most natural foods don't require them. Shout out to our apples and carrots and avocados and fresh kale. Of course, I recognize that time constraints, busy schedules, convenience of packaged foods, and lack of cooking skills can all be barriers to consuming only whole foods. Plus, there are many minimally processed foods that do contain nutrition labels. Canned beans, cooking oils, dry oats and rice, and frozen vegetable medleys, to name a few. Portion size awareness is another important component to building balanced meals. This is a little bit challenging to explain just over audio, as portion size is such a visual lesson. In general, though, it's best to compose half of your plate with fruits and non-starchy vegetables, about a quarter of your plate with whole grains or starchy vegetables, and then another quarter with lean protein or dairy. The protein bit often gets blown way out of proportion on standard American plates. Did you know that a proper serving size of animal protein is only about 3 to 4 ounces? That's about the size of a regular palm or a deck of playing cards. The grains quarter often gets overblown as well, especially in restaurants. A rational serving of grains is about 1 to 2 ounces, which is about a half cup cooked rice, quinoa, or barley, or one slice of bread. Again, choose whole grains as much as possible to boost your fiber intake. And don't forget to add a splash of fat, as this can help your body absorb nutrients and add flavor. I really like Harvard's Healthy Eating Plate that provides a lot more detail and visual context, and I often find it very helpful for many of my clients just beginning their health transformation journeys. Finally, when it comes to developing your knowledge about cooking skills, there are so many existing resources out there to help you. Of course, there are tons of free videos on YouTube. There are lots more websites and cookbooks which teach users how to prepare recipes. And there are also cooking classes which teach skills from the very basics to more advanced techniques. The best thing that you can do is just start somewhere. You'll make mistakes, I promise, but that's how we learn. The more you practice, the easier it will become. As I've done before, I'm going to make a shameless plug for the company that I work for, To Taste, where we recently developed and published an online self-paced knife skills 101 course for beginner home cooks to develop the confidence they need to slice, dice, mince, and chop healthy ingredients. Learning these basic skills can empower you to take control of your health one slice at a time. So even with that being the 10,000 foot view of nutrition, I still feel like we covered a lot of ground, and I'm very excited to fill in the gaps of the things that I just skimmed over. I'll now briefly touch on a few key points of the other three components of health that I mentioned earlier: physical activity, stress reduction, and sleep. You could have the best diet in the world, but if these other factors are non-existent, you can basically wave your health goals goodbye. The World Health Organization recommends that adults get at least 150 to 300 minutes of moderate intensity physical activity per week, including some form of muscle strengthening exercises performed at least twice per week, can provide additional cardiovascular, metabolic, and stability benefits. Find a form of physical activity that works for you. You do not have to start running just because it seems like the best way to exercise. Dancing, weightlifting, walking, hiking, gardening, biking, yoga, rock climbing, kayaking, even some virtual reality games can all be great ways to get your activity in. Also, finding ways to incorporate natural movement throughout your day can provide additional benefits. This could be hand washing dishes, parking the car at the far end of the lot, doing calf raises while you wait for your lunch to heat up, taking the stairs, using a standing desk, or just moving away from your desk periodically throughout the day. Take note from children and pets. They are some of our best examples of what our bodies were designed to do, and that is to move. If you are new to exercising or are just getting back into it after a while of being inactive, it can be beneficial to join a gym, buddy up with a group of people, or at least watch some instructional videos that can guide you on form, technique, and frequency so that you can optimize your time spent moving. I started this episode by talking about crocheting, which for my 8-year-old self was probably a form of stress reduction that I wasn't even aware of. Of course, because I have since dropped that hobby, I have had to find other ways to reduce stress in my day-to-day life. I have found great benefits from practicing yoga, engaging in mindful eating, meditating, going for walks and hikes in the foothills, cooking, reading, and playing my cello. I don't do all of these activities every day, but I do try to dedicate some time each day to recenter and to find joy in the present moment. You may find this centering through any of the above mentioned practices, or through things like painting, playing games, doing puzzles, sewing, dancing, aromatherapy, looking at pictures, cuddling, petting animals, gardening, surfing, swimming, laying in the sun, massages, or something entirely different. Engaging in stress reduction practices can help decrease blood pressure, inflammation, fatigue, blood sugar, irritability, disease risk, and improve sleep, immune function, and relationships. Last but certainly not least, sleep. Sleep is a vital component of health and longevity. Learning basic sleep hygiene strategies can help you maximize your shut-eye time. Some common sleep hygiene tips include sleeping in a completely dark room, limiting caffeine intake after a certain point in the day, limiting or avoiding alcohol consumption, especially close to bedtime, sleeping in a cool room, wearing blue light blocking glasses, reading, meditating, journaling, and keeping screen devices out of bed. Be your own science experiment and learn what works best for your body. Use a notebook to track your sleep patterns, or if you have the option, purchase a wearable device such as an Oura ring or a Whoop wristband, which can provide helpful insights into how you sleep and the factors that improve and disrupt your sleep. I'm not sponsored by either of these brands, I just really like their products. If you have tried all of these methods and you are still unable to get restful sleep, I recommend speaking with a healthcare professional who can help you discover the underlying issues. Poor sleep can lead to increased likelihood of illness, obesity, heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and Alzheimer's disease risk. Did we do it? Do you feel a little bit more educated? Hopefully. If nothing else, a little more curious? Maybe a little bit confused? And that's okay. We'll continue to learn, unlearn, and grow together. I'm here to serve as your guide, as well as an individual to learn alongside with you. So that's all I have for you today. You can find the links to the referenced articles and websites in today's show notes. And if you would like to share how you are fostering knowledge to support your health, or if you have any questions that you would like answered on this platform, I would love to hear. If you have any comments, feedback, or insight, send it my way at wholelifehealthpodcast@gmail.com. If you learned something new or were inspired by anything discussed today, I would be thrilled if you shared the podcast online or on social media in order to spread the message of health. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to learn with me and the Whole Life Health audience. Tune in next time to learn all about the third factor, access. I look forward to continuing the conversation. Here's to your healthful whole life. Be well.